Outkick the coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
All right, you just had what I think is a really interesting comment, Jason Whitlock, that a lot of sports fans, particularly in the NFL, but also in college football, a while ago, baseball changed overwhelmingly. And what I mean by that is, if you had been asleep in like 1994 and you suddenly woke up and you watched baseball over the last 4 or 5 years, the way they shift in the field, the way they play, the way they move, analytics changed baseball substantially. It didn't necessarily change basketball, maybe in the sense that you take a lot more threes, but in football now, and it seems to be in particular this year, suddenly coaches are doing things aggressively that they wouldn't have done before. And one example happened at the end of the game between the Titans and the Texans. Romeo Crennel is the interim head coach. The Texans score on fourth down to go up 7. If you kick the extra point, you go up 8, which would require the Titans, if they came back down the other way, to score a touchdown and a 2-point conversion. If you go for 2, you effectively end the game. That's the argument. You go up 9, but obviously it's more difficult to convert a 2-point conversion than it is to convert a extra point. What did you think of, and I would say this has happened really kind of suddenly, this decision, because for almost everybody out there who's listening to me right now, you would always have kicked the extra point and gone up 8 and put the team in position where they have to go out there and score a touchdown and get the 2-point conversion. You would never have gone for 2 and left it potentially at 7. It's changed, there's no doubt. The argument is if you get to 9, you've got the game locked up, and there's no real way necessarily to lose because it's a 2-score game. You wouldn't have done that. You wrote it in your column. Why do you think things are changing so rapidly in that analytical perspective?
Well, you've asked a big question. I'm going to reduce it initially just to Romeo Crennel. He's an interim head coach. He's desperate. He wanted to be the reason they won that game. And if he's the reason they won that game and they can get some momentum off that, maybe Romeo Crennel can hoodwink the Houston Texans into him remaining their head coach. That was a selfish, hey, look at me decision from a guy who just isn't a selfish person or a hey, look at me person. But given the situation, interim head coach knows this is however long the rest of this season lasts for the Texans, be the last time he's a head coach, most likely. He was just trying too hard. And look, you let the players decide the game. Coaches have an impact during practice. Once the game, it's all up to the players. He should have stayed out of it. I had no problem in another game, Washington playing the Giants, Ron Rivera with a weak team, with a, you know, backup quarterback playing now, you know, part stopgap quarterback. I had no problem with them. Like, hey, look, we're going to roll the dice here and try to end this game with a 2-point conversion. I had no, because they lost 20-19. Yeah. When you have a chance to go up 8 points and really, really increase your odds of winning that game and making it hard on the Tennessee Titans, it was just a dumb decision by Romeo Crennel. It was a selfish, hey, look at me decision. Look, I won the game. I was so aggressive, and he would be the conversation, and people would say, "Oh, what a gutsy call!" If they had made it, I would have been like, "That's one of the dumbest things I've ever seen." These guys are working too hard, the Houston Texans, to have Romeo inject himself into the end of that game in that way, and it just blew up in his face. So I don't like it, but you're right. Analytics and social media and the way the game is discussed and who all gets to discuss what's going on, that the 2-point conversion deal has taken on ultimate importance, because that's something everybody can discuss. If you start talking about, well, damn, why were they in quarters coverage at the end of the game? That's not something everybody can discuss. Most people don't know what quarters coverage is. They don't know whether, you know, they don't know hardly any of the strategy. Whether math, simple math, everybody can understand it and discuss it. And so it's taken on an importance, and people are trying to the over-aggressiveness with two-point conversions drives me nutty. I don't think you should go for two until the last 6 minutes of the fourth quarter of any game, regardless of the score. But, you know, people start chasing points as soon as, you know, the numbers get a little bit off course. They start chasing points regardless, and I always think it's a mistake.
We're talking to Jason Whitlock, the opposite of a mistake. Sometimes your offense can be rolling in such a way. The Titans put up over 350 passing yards and over 200 rushing yards, which never had been done in the history of the NFL before, against the Houston Texans. They closed out that win with Derrick Henry in the King Henry formation, whatever you want to call it, snapping direct to him. Now, some people said, oh, that's a crazy decision on third and five. It worked. But what's interesting is Vrabel was saying then, hey, we were going to go for the win. You know, if he got stopped a yard short, we were going to go for it on fourth down, because if you score a touchdown, the game's over. If you kick a field goal, they get a chance to come back the other direction and beat you, and we wanted to end the game right then and there. To me, that's evidence. You talked about earlier about the team kind of having a cohesiveness to it. It's also evidence that the coaching staff is working. If you can think a few plays ahead, and I think Vrabel did the same thing when he got a 12th man on the field. I don't know if you saw that. He was facing a second and one, went ahead and gave the first down, because otherwise he was going to cost his team potentially 40 seconds trying to stop a second and one when the odds of the Texans getting those three, getting that yard on the next couple of plays were extremely high. He is just coming into his own, and you know this feeling when you're writing a column, when I'm talking on the radio, and you've done it long enough and you're doing it well, you can start to see and make connections where others might not, because you're not as panicked in the moment. And I'm starting to see Vrabel come into his own on the sideline as a coach, where it's like the game is slowing down for him, which happens to whatever you do for a living. If you get good at a profession, it slows down and you can see things coming in a way that younger people or people who haven't, maybe don't have the talent or haven't done it as long, can't. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. And what to me is clear is that the Titans last year got comfortable with Ryan Tannehill.
That's right.
And then Derrick Henry became such a superstar last year, and through that playoff run, the Titans have, like, an identity. I mean, because a lot of teams struggle. They have success, but they don't really have an identity, a formula. Here's what we do to win football games. The Titans clearly have that. And so this offseason, when the Titans brought in Jadeveon Clowney, I was like, not sure if I like that move. His motor doesn't run all the time. But the reason why the Titans did it is because, like, no. We have an identity. We're going to place Jadeveon Clowney into our system and our identity, and it's going to work. He's going to conform to what we have here in Tennessee. And we have the players in this locker room to make him conform and be a part of something positive. Again, it's not that Jadeveon's been this major, major headache around the league, because he hasn't. But there was a reason why he couldn't get the contract he wanted, and it took the last minute. But so, like the New England Patriots, when Belichick and Brady had things rolling, they could bring almost anybody in. They have an identity. They have a culture. We just drop people into our system. The Baltimore Ravens had it with Ed Reed and Ray Lewis and John Harbaugh. Drop people in. The Tennessee Titans now have that. That's what makes them dangerous. I think the Kansas City Chiefs believe they have it. That's why they went out and got Le'Veon Bell. I'm here in Tennessee. I'm, you know, seeing the, and look, I watch the Chiefs every week too. So, but I can just see, to me, from Vrabel to Tannehill to Henry, this team has an identity and a special bond, and they could drop me or you into that locker room and it would still work.
And everybody knows we are locker room disruptors. We're talking to Jason Whitlock at Whitlock Jason on Twitter. You can read him at outkick.com. Okay, so let's go into this this Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers battle. You had Tom Brady in the glue factory, and in your column on Monday morning, you said he looked like he was 25 years old. I mean, that was a beatdown that the Bucs and their defense put on Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. What did we learn, if anything, from that game?
That Tampa's defense is really fast. Todd Bowles is doing a great job with it. But more than anything, I do have to say, the way that ball came out of Tom Brady's hands on Sunday, the way he manipulated the pocket and moved, his numbers weren't overwhelming, but he and Gronk had their connection working again. And Brady just nice ball placement, things on time, and part of it I was influenced because, you know, I watched three or four games at a time. I got three NFL Sunday ticket packages so I can watch multiple games. I had just watched Cam Newton in New England, and he was horrendous. And then to turn back around, and I was able to solo in and focus on that Buccaneers Green Bay game, and to see Tom Brady, I was like, oh my God, Tom Brady is winning the divorce today, big time. And I know New England had practice problems, and I know Cam had COVID and wasn't able to practice, but it was night and day watching Tom's command of that offense. And look, Tom's working with better personnel, better skills players, but that Patriots offense looked horrendous. Cam looked so out over his skis. They started having to do trick plays just to throw the ball, trying to protect Cam and making Julian Edelman throw the ball from the wide receiver position just to move the ball in the air. And then to turn back around and see Tom Brady, I was really impressed with Brady on Sunday.
Yeah, I don't think there's any way you could not have been impressed by Brady, even the Brady haters out there. The Bucs look like right now the best team in the NFC South, and they look like a contender for potentially, as things go along, the crown in the NFC for sure. A team that does not look like it, and we talked about this in the context of the divorce between Brady and Belichick. I mean, the Patriots fell on their face in a way, frankly, that we haven't seen the Patriots fall on their face in a long time. I mean, it's not just that Cam didn't play well. The opponent matters here. And the Broncos were coming into town. They hadn't had a very good season so far. Drew Locke had been injured. He still hasn't played very many games. A team like that doesn't go on the road and win in Foxborough for basically much of the last 20 years. What's going on now with the Patriots? Can they climb out of this hole, or do you think this is a playoff team at all in New England?
He said all the right things after the game. He took it on himself. He has to play better. I like when Cam's in that mentality. He was horrible, and so I'm making no excuse. But he hadn't played in a couple, 2 or 3 weeks. The Patriots basically haven't practiced in the past couple weeks. So as bad as they were, and it was horrible, I'm not going to overreact until this week. I need to see how they rebound and recover from this before I overreact. I got to remember, I just saw Buffalo get beat up by the Kansas City Chiefs. The Patriots, you know, Miami's 3-3. The Jets are the worst team perhaps in the history of football. And so that AFC East deal is still wide, wide open. And so I'm not going to write off New England. They had a bunch of circumstances that still go unexplained to me because, as I said in my column on Monday, it's like I just read like a 10,000-word piece in the Washington Post tracing everything that happened at a motorcycle rally in Sturgis, South Dakota, and I can't get one word of speculation about how Cam Newton got COVID. Not one single word. He's the only starting quarterback that I know of in the NFL that got COVID. He's had some accusations of being an irresponsible person, and I can't get one word of speculation how he threw this team into upheaval when he contracted COVID, and it's really shut down the Patriots' ability to prepare and consistently, because, you know, Stephon Gilmore got COVID, I think, from being around Cam. They got a hot mess, and Tom Brady, I'm sure, is living. He's probably wrapping himself in a plastic bubble at night and won't even touch Giselle because this season's so important for him. Whereas Cam Newton did something, and look, maybe it was innocent. Maybe, you know, a mosquito gave it to him. I don't know, but I sure as hell would like to know how Cam got COVID, and is he taking all the precautions that Tom Brady's taking? I just want to know.
When we come back with Jason Whitlock, we'll dive into some more of the takes from the weekend in the NFL. Baker Mayfield going up against the Steelers. What did we learn, if anything, from that performance? What do we think in general about the about Carson Wentz and the Eagles? You are impressed by Carson Wentz, and I'm a little bit intrigued by that opinion. I want to dive into it. And more, all of that still to come. This is OutKick on Fox Sports Radio.
This is OutKick, the coverage with Clay Travis.
Talking with Jason Whitlock. Read him at OutKick.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Whitlock Jason. We're breaking down everything that happened in the NFL and maybe a little college football here before we are done. Encourage you to go sign up for the podcast. Make sure you don't miss a single minute there. Okay, I teased as we went to break. Baker Mayfield, big game. A lot of people thought, I thought maybe it would be interesting in the NFC North. Baker Mayfield, 4-1, Cleveland Browns. They've won four games in a row. They're going on the road, measuring stick game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. If it was a measuring stick, the Steelers took it and smacked the Browns right across the face with it because it wasn't much of a game. What's going on with Baker? Where do you see it going? Did this tell us more about the Steelers or more about the Browns?
That's a good question. I want to say, look, Baker Mayfield is playing with some banged up ribs. But I think, and I've watched the Browns this year, between Odell Beckham Jr., Myles Garrett, Jarvis Landry, Baker Mayfield, the biggest names, probably their highest paid players, Baker Mayfield, to me, has been the weakest of the league. Throw in the running backs, Kareem Hunt, Nick Chubb, throw those guys in as well. He's been the weakest of those guys. And it's been fine because everybody's been playing well, and he's been playing solid and up until this past week where he was terrible. And now you just put the whole thing, you evaluate the entire season. Baker Mayfield's the weak link for the Cleveland Browns. And, you know, I don't like undersized quarterbacks. He's a bit undersized. He's not as athletic as Russell Wilson or Kyler Murray. When he moves out of the pocket, he's a half step slower than any of those guys. And so what is special about Baker Mayfield? A lot of it's attitude and tangibles, and because I don't think his arm strength is that special. I'm not sure if his accuracy is that special. And certainly when he's banged up, he's not special at all. And so that Pittsburgh pass rush and defense just annihilated the Cleveland Browns and Baker Mayfield. And, you know, as I said in my column on Monday yesterday, was that, like, you put Carson Wentz on the Cleveland Browns, and that's a special team. With Baker Mayfield, and so I guess having said all that, my takeaway is the Steelers prove that Baker Mayfield, nice little start, but I'm not sure if he's a franchise quarterback. And I don't think he's a bust either, but I'm just not sure if he's a special quarterback.
Well, I thought it was interesting because you tied in a bunch of these guys, and the quarterback position matters more than any position in all of sports. But in your column, and I think this is a great, you know, sort of barroom debate out there, you said, look, Kirk Cousins is not the guy. And that Daniel Snyder basically decided he wasn't the guy when he decided back-to-back to franchise tag him. And I think there are a lot of people in Minnesota who are fans of the show that are listening right now saying, okay, I'm kind of coming around. I'll be honest with you. Cousins at times has been fool's gold. And it felt like the Vikings were a quarterback away when Case Keenum had him in the NFC Championship game against the Eagles. And so I can see why people would think, oh, if we just plugged in the right quarterback, we would win. That hasn't happened for Minnesota. I don't think it's going to happen, okay? So that is thrown 10 interceptions. He's been mediocre. Carson Wentz is under perpetual siege in Philadelphia, which is a tough city to play in general. But with the money that he's made, some Eagle fans don't think he's deserved it. Dak is going to be a major decision going forward for the Cowboys because he was playing on the franchise tag. You suggested they need to franchise tag him again. All of these are big decisions that are basically business decisions, right? Because the quarterback is, for better or worse, the CEO of your team, and how you invest your dollars there doesn't just determine how you do this year. It determines how you're going to do over the next 5 to 7 years.
Yeah, look. I'm someone that watches a lot of Carson Wentz, and I'm intrigued by all the criticism he takes. Nick Foles won the Super Bowl there.
Yep.
And then, the name of the wide receiver that repeatedly took shots at Carson Wentz and started the narrative that, you know, he's not popular in the locker room. I'm just telling people, watch this dude play the actual games and see what he's dealing with in terms of no
the amount of drops he gets, too. I mean, his receivers have been mediocre at best, but there's been so many drops. There were a lot of drops in that game against the Ravens on Sunday.
Yeah, and I'm just – the way he battles and competes, had them within a two-point conversion of sending that game to overtime. I told my cousin before the game, he called me, I'm thinking about betting on the Ravens. He calls, asks me for advice every Sunday morning, and I was like –
poor guy.
I agree with that. But I was like, hey, man, don't bet against Carson Wentz. He'll figure out a way to make that a one-possession game. And he did just that. I'm really high on him. I think he needs to get the hell out of Philadelphia. If he could get to Indianapolis next year or Cleveland next year, I think that guy is the next – but he'll be better then. But he's the next Ryan Tannehill of football. People in Philly want to run him out. People think Jalen Hurts is better than him. Let Carson Wentz get to a place with an offensive line and a couple wide receivers, and he'll be one of the top three or four quarterbacks in the NFL.
Well, what I think is interesting about what you just said is Ryan Tannehill has changed the narrative, right? Because it used to be that if your quarterback didn't work out and he was a first-round pick, basically the NFL consensus was that means he's damaged goods. He's never going to work anywhere, right? I mean, because you think about it, who have been championship-caliber performers that have been found on, you know, sort of the dustbin or in the leftover, you know, remainder bin of the pro football, right? Like, I know there have been guys like Kurt Warner that never really got a chance, and then suddenly they emerge and they end up being Super Bowl champions, like happened with Kurt Warner in St. Louis. But by and large, there aren't very many guys out there. In fact, Tannehill may be the only one where they are a first-round pick, they go somewhere, it doesn't work, and then they go somewhere else, and it's like the light bulb comes on. And Tannehill right now is playing as well as anybody in the NFL. And now there are going to be other teams saying, well, wait a minute, maybe there's bad circumstances. Maybe there's a reason why we can rehabilitate and use a player that might otherwise not have worked out somewhere else, right? I mean, you can point historically, Brett Favre didn't work in Atlanta. They traded him to Green Bay, but he was never really the starter there. There aren't very many reclamation projects in football at the quarterback position that end up being superstars.
Yeah, and Brett Favre's not a good enough because he was never really given a chance.
That's right.
Mike Holmgren, Tulsa. The guy that I think Tannehill is helping the most is Jameis Winston.
Yep.
So if Jameis Winston just continues to keep his head down in New Orleans, somebody, some coach is going to say, I wonder if he could be our Tannehill. I wonder if he's been humbled enough, because what happens at the quarterback position, particularly for number one overall picks, and why they don't end up working out other places, because quarterback is such a confidence deal. And it's about leadership and other intangibles to get. Once you get bent someplace, it's hard to ever become the guy someplace else and have people look at you like you're the guy. And so that, again, is where I think Derrick Henry has been such an asset for Tannehill, is because he's got to develop into the star quarterback under the shadow or in collaboration with Derrick Henry. Both of these guys, the last 2 years, have revealed themselves, and Derrick Henry, you know, perhaps arguably one of the two or three best running backs in football, and Tannehill showing himself to be one of the six or seven best quarterbacks in football. They've kind of done that together. If you can package Jameis Winston, either the right receiver, the right running back or something, get him in a situation, if his confidence hasn't been totally eroded, maybe he can be the next Ryan Tannehill. But if not him, if Philly is foolish enough to let Carson Wentz go, some other team, Colts, Browns, are going to be really, really happy.
We're talking to Jason Whitlock at Whitlock Jason on Twitter. Last thought for you. I want to get a little bit of college football. Did you watch Georgia-Alabama?
Some, not a lot.
All right, so big picture here. Nick Saban tests positive for COVID. Then it's a false positive, and he tests negative five different times, and he goes and coaches. I know you follow the news of these COVID positivity stories quite a bit. It feels like about half of every one of these COVID positives ends up being negative. When I see stories like these, I wonder, oh my goodness, how many people out there think they have COVID? They're quarantining for a couple of weeks. They never actually had it. We know Nick Saban, because of the resources Alabama had, they can go back and retest him. Most people only get tested once, if that, and they 100% trust whatever the results are. Are you like me that this athletic universe in general, the number of stories where it comes out, somebody tested positive, and then later they're like, oh, wait a minute, it was a false positive. It's happening multiple times a week now with the NFL and with college football. This is pretty wild.
It's wild, and it's just, look, I saw someone I respect tweet out that, you know, Nick Saban's jeopardizing his kids. He's so selfish. Can't believe he was coached. And this is, they tweeted this out after he had tested negative two or three times.
Five times, yeah.
Yeah. And so I was like, hey, first of all, I mean, stop it. These kids aren't dying. It's a bad case of the flu. And I understand that COVID is allegedly worse than the flu or whatever, but I just think what's been going on in college football and the NFL has been a huge success and has been necessary for the country and getting people back to a sense of normalcy. And hopefully, when this whole thing is over, it will get people beyond this irrational fear.
Yeah.
And that is, I know people, or maybe have had family members that have been sick with COVID and passed away. I'm not trying to minimize that. But we also know people that have gotten sick with the flu and died.
Yeah.
We know people that have died in any number of ways. I'm not trying to diminish that. But we have to continue on with life. I think what's gone on in sports, and even I'll toss in the NBA bubble and how that's been handled, it's all been a positive. The Major League Baseball getting through these playoffs, I'm just so glad that people stood up and said, you know what? There are some of us that remember what the price of freedom is, and it's to move without fear. If you let fear control you, you're no longer free. And so I just think what's gone on so far has been a necessary and uplifting success story. And I wish people would talk and write about it in that light instead of, oh, God, we should all be afraid. We should actually be looking at what's going on in sports and saying, huh, maybe there's a way to continue on with life, even knowing COVID is out there. We continue on with life knowing HIV is out there, knowing the flu is out there, knowing all these other diseases, cancer. We still keep it moving, and that's what we need to do. And so hats off to the people that walked through their fear and got this college football season off the ground. It's been a success.
And the MAC is coming back, which means that football is really back, right?
Yes, sir.
That is Jason Whitlock. We will talk to him again on this program next week. Encourage you to go follow him on Twitter at WhitlockJason. maybe some good stuff coming down this week. I feel pretty confident about it. Thank you, my man.
Thank you.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
This was Monday Night Football-wise. And by the way, thanks to Jason Whitlock. If you just heard the end of that interview, I would encourage you to go download the podcast. Make sure you don't miss a single minute of the show, because a lot of good conversation coming out of that discussion with Jason Whitlock, and a lot of reaction, as always, to that discussion that we have with Jason Whitlock. But encourage you to download the podcast. Make sure you don't miss a minute. That was as bad of a performance from the Dallas Cowboys as I have ever seen in the Jerry Jones era. I think you can go all the way back to when they started the Troy Aikman process and they brought in Aikman and they found Michael Irvin and they got Emmitt Smith. And the Cowboys have been, at frequent times, really disappointing to their fans. I'm not sure that we've seen a lower low than what we saw last night from the Cowboys in that beatdown that they got from the Arizona Cardinals. And I'm not trying to take anything away from the Arizona Cardinals. I think the Kyler Murray-Cliff Kingsbury combination has the potential to be very successful. The Arizona Cardinals are already 4-2. They play in the toughest division in all of the NFL in the NFC West. There's not a lot, I really don't believe, that separates the best team in that division, which right now is the Seattle Seahawks, from the worst team in the division, which I think is right now, which just kind of puts it in a perspective, the team that almost won the Super Bowl last year, the San Francisco 49ers. I just don't think there's very much difference from top to bottom in that division. Everybody's really, really good. So I understand that the Arizona Cardinals are good, and I'm not trying to take away from them. But you just got humiliated at home in your stadium, Jerry Jones's world that he's created there, by a second-year quarterback in Kyler Murray and a second-year head coach in Cliff Kingsbury that a lot of people said was going to be in over his head. And Mike McCarthy is there. You can't turn and blame Jason Garrett anymore. You can't in any way point to any kind of failure that's going on from somebody that you can easily replace. Dak Prescott has come in for a lot of criticism over the years. That offense was so bad. And even that final touchdown drive that they had, it took so long for that touchdown to happen. I know the Cowboys have the biggest fan base in the entire country. I know a lot of you who are listening to me right now in all 50 states may well be Cowboy fans, but I don't know how much lower you can go. And the fact that the NFC East gets a playoff bid at all, I really don't know how many wins it's going to take to win the NFC East. Six might do it. Seven might do it. I don't think there's any way anybody's going to get to eight, because to get to eight at this point, the best team in the division, which is sadly the Dallas Cowboys, would have to go 6-2 in their final eight. Is there anybody out there on the planet that thinks the Cowboys are going to go that well? Sorry, my math was a little bit off. They're 2-4 right now, so they wouldn't have to go 6-2, but they would still have to go 6-4. Is there anybody out there that thinks the Cowboys are going to go 6-4 from here? I don't think so. And so the idea, first of all, that they are going to have an automatic playoff spot is crazy. The idea on top of that, that they're going to have the automatic playoff spot, and on top of that, that they are going to have the automatic playoff spot, and they're going to also have the ability to host a home playoff game. It's crazy. I think before all is said and done, this might be the end of every division getting to host a home playoff game. Because now that you're expanding to seven teams in the AFC and the NFC, I think a lot of people are going to sit around and they're going to start to sort of wrinkle their brow. And they're going to say, wait a minute. Why shouldn't we just take the teams with the four best records and let them host the home playoff games? And I think a lot of you out there kind of nodding your head, you're sitting there and saying, you know what? That makes the most sense. Take the teams with the four best records. The number one overall seed gets a bye, but then the next three teams get to host wild card weekend. And so if the Cowboys end up getting one of these spots, or the Washington football team does, or the Philadelphia Eagles, or it ends up being the New York Giants, whoever emerges from the NFC East, whoever that team is, then go ahead and let them host, but let them make the playoffs, but don't let them host. Make them the last seed. Dub, do you have any, like, does that not make total sense that we should just go ahead and give the four home playoff teams the best, the four best records, give them the home playoff games?
Yeah, especially when we have a situation like this. I think the winner of this division, this NFC East, is probably going to have six wins.
I don't think that's a crazy idea.
It sounds ludicrous to say, or to, if someone would have said this at the beginning of the season, that there would be a division in the NFL whose winner would have six games, that would be unthinkable. But I think that's what's going to happen, and they shouldn't even be allowed to be in the playoffs, let alone host a game.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense at all. And and I think even the Dallas Cowboy girlfriend consoling her, I'm betting it's a boyfriend. We'll dive into that probably a little bit later. By the way, we have had such a loaded show, and we've got a loaded show going forward as well. We are scheduled in the next segment to be joined by Fox NFL analyst Jay Glazer. So that is a big hit. And then Petros Papadakis is also going to swing by and hang out with us. Absolutely loaded show. Encourage you to download the podcast. If you just heard Jason Whitlock, or maybe you missed it, we have had a lot to unpack throughout today's program. We have got the podcast numbers just continue to grow, and the audience continues to grow. And I thank all of you for helping to make that a reality. And if you want to help OutKick grow even more, the thing you can do most is go sign up for the OutKick VIP. You have access to the OutKick VIP phone line. You can comment on all of our articles, get a message board. All of that is fantastic. I would encourage you guys to go sign up today and make sure you don't miss it. And by the way, the other Monday Night Football game, obviously, Kansas City Chiefs, to me, sort of sent a message to the Buffalo Bills, and they sent a message to the Ravens earlier. You're not ready to step to us in the AFC. When we come back, Jay Glazer scheduled to join us. This is OutKick on Fox Sports Radio.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.